Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. Welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I am said Moe. This is said Paisley Penny Arcade. Today is Wednesday, September the 17th of 2025. Five. That's 10. 5 and 5 is 10. Welcome! I hope you're doing well. For those of you listening on 1-2 Radio, hi. For those of you watching on YouTube, hi. Are you high? I'm kidding. I'm just saying silly things. For those of you who'd like to join me in the 1-2 Radio thing, go to 1-2radio.com, click on chat, and you will immediately be listening to me live. And this is also on demand. For those of you who would like to join me on YouTube, it's YouTube at MoeAbdelBaki.com. I will have some visual aids today, so you might want to join me there. Then again, you might not want to. It's all up to you, and you can watch me in the future, because these are then, they're there. They're there. They are there. And they are there kind of forever, I guess. I guess that's how that works, it seems to be. So, I hope you're having a good day. Hope you had a good week. Today's show is going to be, gosh, what a turbulent week it was in this country. Lots of turbulence, lots of division, lots of, I'm going to stay out of it. See, I'm a political sort of guy. I was a history major in college, and I follow these things. So I'm just going to kind of butt out for now. So, I think that's a good idea. Let's just keep it at that. So, welcome. I hope you're doing well. Interesting topic today for me. It's something I've been fascinated with for decades. And I hope you'll enjoy it, too. It has to do with ancient Egyptian philosophy. And it has to do with the concept of the Ka, the Ba, and different aspects of what makes human beings human. That's right. Different things that we are, that make us up. And it's a really intense sort of thing. I used E.A. Wallace Budge, who was a fantastic guy, I think. I never met him or anything. But he wrote the first Egyptian Book of the Dead and put it out there. And I first got a hold of that book when I was about 12 years old. And was absolutely fascinated and couldn't take my hands off of it, and spent a lot of time reading the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And one of the things that got me right from the beginning was in the foreword, which was about the different parts of what we are, human beings, and the different aspects before we're gone, before we die, and then afterwards that trounce around the ether, and we're very important. So we'll talk about that today. Do I have any announcements to make? I don't think there's a lot of them. There's a solar eclipse on the 21st, which is Sunday, coming up. And, there's all sorts of, a lot of people talking about the astrological import of that, so I don't think I'll spend too much time. It's going to take me a little while to get through these things today. So, oh, and I wanted to mention something. Last week, in talking about the I Ching, I talked about the Yarrow stocks. Let me mention that you don't have to have Yarrow stocks to do this. You can use any old sticks. These are just sticks that I got, and I colored with old English furniture polish, I think is what I used. I don't think I used much of anything else. And they are the three, you know, hand sizes. So it's like one, two, and three. And so you can, you know, it doesn't have to be Yarrow stocks. These are dowels that I bought at my local craft store. And there's 50 of them. And I keep them in this incense burner. And this is a, you know, an endless knot that I tied. And it's kind of nice. And so that's that. You don't have to, I forgot to mention that it does not have to be Yarrow stocks. Just use whatever you have and have whatever you use. And that makes little sense, if any. So I urge you all, just during these times of nonsense, to use common sense. We all have it. We don't all use it all the time, and I'm one of those. I don't always use it all the time. But hatred's a terrible thing. There's a lot of it lately, and I just think that it's a horrific energy, and one that is much too common. Strange things happening. Very strange things happening, I'm afraid. And I just, you know. So let's begin this process. So what is this about? Well, there are many things that are fascinating about ancient Egyptian philosophy. The philosophy of the soul, the philosophy of what's what. And one of those was, what are we made up of? And essentially, the ancient Egyptians said, well, there's about nine things that we're made up of. And the first one was what's known as the Chat. And if you're wondering how to spell that, it's no, it's K-H-A-T, Chat. And the Chat was essentially the corruptible aspect of what we are, or the body, the flesh and the blood. So it's all this stuff. And this was, of course, a very important part of what we are, no doubt about that. But it was, important for sure, but the Chat is the Chat. And it's vital because one of the things that was important, philosophically speaking, was that we had to be able to recognize ourselves after our moving on to the next form in order to remain ourselves. And one thing that was very important to my ancestors was that they be able to recognize themselves so they could stay themselves in the afterlife. They truly, genuinely believed in an afterlife. That was something they absolutely believed in, that there would be more of life. Now, you have to realize something about ancient Egyptian life. The average lifespan of an ancient Egyptian was 30. That was a pretty good life. You know, if you had someone living to be 35 or 40, they were considered an old-timer. And if someone lived to be 50 or 60, they were pretty ancient. So it really was something if people lived to be, you know, geriatric age. I mean, that's really kind of amazing. I'm sure there were people who did. But one of the things that they really, I mean, life was fast. Life was really fast. And they wanted to stay Egyptians. They wanted to stay in Egypt. One of the worst things they could imagine in my... Now, let me get something straight here. Not an Egyptologist. I had aspirations for such when I was in undergrad school, and that's where I stayed, was undergrad school. I got my BA, and I got a degree as well. And I just, that's about as far as I went, for reasons that sorted, and I'm not going to discuss here. But, and then eventually I became this guy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got my card here. It's a little bent up, but I became Mighty Mo the Yo-Yo Pro. That phone number does not work, so don't call me there. Mighty Mo the Yo-Yo Pro. It was that for a long time. There are some people who still know me as Mighty Mo the Yo-Yo Pro, but I've hung up my strings. Haven't flipped a yo-yo around in decades, quite literally. It's a good story. I'll tell you that story sometime. Yeah, and I got, that's Mr. Yo-Yo. I got permission to use that from, by Donald Duncan Jr. I have written permission around here somewhere. Because I knew that, you know, I wanted to use Mr. Yo-Yo, and I said, can I use that? He said, sure. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, can you give me written permission? He looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, nope, need to have it. Need to have it. Oh, hello, Alice and Anthony. How are you? I love you, too. My grandkids are in the chat room, so at least they're in the chat room and listening. Love you, too. How you doing? Good to hear you. Good to see you in there. Yeah, come on in. It's good. Whoever wants to be in there. Yeah, it's wonderful. So I did not do any further. But these are my views on this stuff. I've been doing some more research and some more thinking. When it comes to an ancient culture, research is one thing, but thinking is another. And I think that thought is very important when it comes to how these things work out. You do your own thinking. And then you write a book, and someone comes out and destroys you in the book, and that's fine. At least you did your best. Now, I don't know that there's a book in what I'm thinking about, but there's some interesting ideas here. Okay, so what the Egyptians wanted, because they saw the rest of the world, they were surrounded by desert and hostile environments. They knew that there was a lot of heat around them. Well, they had the Mediterranean Sea. I've been to Alexandria, which is a gorgeous city. It really is a lovely, lovely city. I hear now it is unbelievably crowded. I've been there in a long, long time. I was there as a kid. I lived there for about 6 months, and I was there when I was about 18 for about 3 weeks. That's it. I have no other knowledge. Well, I wasn't there for 3 weeks. I was there for a few days. But anyway, so the point is that right on the Mediterranean, right there, and it's gorgeous, and that's just a crescent, you know, like a crescent city, like New Orleans, you know, and which is another really great city, which I have not seen since Katrina. See how easy it is to get me off track? It's really pretty good. So, but the other thing is that I think things through. So I could be wrong, I could be right, that's fine. But the idea is that they realize that, well, what's that afterlife going to be like? Well, I'd like it to be this, because this is kind of fine. And people talk about slaves used to build the pyramids and so on. I don't think so. Why? Because it was considered an honor to work on the pyramids. It was an honor to work for the king, because the king was responsible for keeping cosmic order. That was his job. His job was to make sure everything was taken care of. That was it. He was the in-between for the gods. There were the gods, and they ran everything, and there was a hierarchy there, too. And then there was everybody. And in many ways, that king was responsible to everybody, the gods and humanity. And if you had a really bad king, that was a bad deal, and it would reflect on the environment. So there would be starvation, and there would be all sorts of problems. And it was not unheard of, I don't think, for people to get kind of upset and to wonder, do we need to do something about this here king of ours? So it's kind of important to keep an eye on the stories that are told. It really is. Because a lot of stories do get told. And some of them are religious history. And religious history is just that. Real, you know, it's history that is founded in religion. And people are told you have to believe in this because it's religious history. And then there is the historic record. And then there's, you know, whatever. So I have a tendency to just kind of say, okay, let me just kind of do my own thing and believe what I can and go from there, if that makes sense. And you want to believe what you believe, which you can take it all in and grind it in through that little, not little, you got a big brain, big meat grinder brain of yours. It doesn't have to grind meat. If you're a vegetarian, it grinds vegetables, and go from there. Because it's all what you want to gestate, you see? And so you begin to realize that these other cultures were not necessarily stupid because they were so long ago. That they may have had incredible technologies, but their technologies were based upon very different things. Like, well, they didn't have TV. They didn't have the internet. They had their minds. And maybe they had things that we couldn't even begin to comprehend. And I'm not talking about spacemen or anything like that. We have to give our type credit. There are quarries all over the place that have quarry marks on them that say, you know, this is the crocodile gang and this is the this gang. And we cut these stones for the pyramids. And I've seen the pyramid. I stood at the base of the Great Pyramid. Man, it's big. It's 13 acres at the base. 13 acres at the base. It's huge. You stand at the bottom of the Great Pyramid and you look up and you can't see the top because it's so tall. It's almost 500 feet tall. That's big. It's really big. I mean, I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe I want to climb this thing. And I looked at the stones and I said, first of all, it's really old and they're kind of crumbling in places. And you think, no. And then secondly, they're big. They're up to here. You're standing and they're up to here. And you're thinking, I'm not climbing this thing. I'd be out of my mind to try to climb this thing. I'd probably die, you know? I'd probably, you know, I'd be, you know, how long is 13 acres? I don't know. That's a good question. It's gigantic. It took me, a question in the chat room, it took me about half an hour to walk around, maybe longer to walk around the Great Pyramid. I was walking, I was very disappointed. I was supposed to be able to go inside the Great Pyramid. And my family kept stalling. And stalling and stalling. And I found out later that there is a thought that people like me, there are people like me, they call it Pharaoni, which means that they are a throwback to the pharaonic times. That's what my parents used to call me when I was a kid. And so they purposely kept from going, because it closed at 4:30. It was in the winter time. And so they made sure that they were light, and they didn't want me to go because they're kind of superstitious, and they thought that if I went into the king's chamber of the Great Pyramid, something might happen to me. Oh, well, it happened anyway. It happened before. I mean, they thought I might be kind of goofy, you know? yeah, I'm goofy anyway. I mean, I was goofy to begin with. So what I did instead was I walked. I was very disappointed because I really wanted to go. What on the north side of the Great Pyramid, you climb up this little staircase, and there's this huge corbelled sort of thing on the outside, and where they've blown it open, or they did back in the days when the Arabs first got, you know, they got there and they were trying to find treasure, and there's a hole, and there you pay your money and you go inside. And but it was, they had a big gate on it, meaning you're not coming in. So I looked at that, and I was more than disgruntled. I was ungruntled. I was that upset. And I thought, because we were not going back. They said, well, maybe we'll get you back here before you go back to the States. I was with my family, my mom and dad and my sister and my brothers. But it was like, I know we're not coming back. Even though we were staying at my grandmother's place, she lived in Giza, literally 5 minutes away. I knew they're not bringing me back. So I went down and I walked around. It's a big walk all the way. And I came around the side on what would have been, let's see, would be the west side of the pyramid. And I was looking south, and it was getting close to sundown. And holy cannoli, it was unbelievable. Because there I could see Zoser's step pyramid. And way off in the distance, I could see the bent pyramid and the pyramid that collapsed. And it was just off. I could see all these other pyramids. And it blew my mind. It just blew my mind. It was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And there right below me was the Sphinx. And I said, this is one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen. So I walked down this little road, and people were, you know, leaving because it was going to be sunset soon. And I thought, you know, I may not get to go into the Great Pyramid, but I am going to see the stele of Thutmose IV. Because the story is incredible. I can't tell the story right now because I have a lot to cover today. I have a feeling I may not get through it all, but this is a good story. So, Thutmose IV, in line for the kingship. No, not in line for the kingship, because he had older brothers. His father, Thutmose III, but he's not in line for the throne. He's got older brothers, and he's not even, you know, he likes to hunt. He likes to do this stuff. He's, you know, he's not. And one day he's out. Okay, I'm going to tell three. So one day he's out, and he's hunting lions. There used to be lions in that area, and they were ferocious, dangerous lions. They were like protectors of the area. You know, that's what they thought they were. And so he's lying in the shadow of the Sphinx. And of course, he's got guys protecting him. He's a prince. You're not going to not protect the prince. And he's lying out there, and he's lying underneath the shadow of the Sphinx. And the Sphinx comes to him in a dream and says, you, and by the way, the Sphinx is covered to here. And by that point, it was ancient. And they didn't know that it was more underneath. They thought maybe a little bit more, but they didn't know how much. It was just, it's from like the neck up. And the Sphinx says, you need to clear away all this sand. He says, for what? He says, because there's a whole statue underneath here. I want you to clear this sand away from me. And if you do that and keep that sand away and build a wall and make sure that it stays away from me, I will make you the greatest king that Egypt has ever known. He says, really? He said, what'd I tell you? I'm taking freedom there. And so he wakes up and he says, we must immediately begin clearing the sand away from here. And they say, okay, you're a prince. We'll start doing it. So they start doing this, and they clear it all away. And guess who becomes the king of Egypt against all odds? This guy. He becomes Thutmose IV, one of the greatest kings ever of Egypt. And that's what happens. So they were astounded to see there was so much Sphinx. And so he erected a stele, a huge round thing. Now, I thought it was maybe 4 feet tall. It's like 12 feet tall. It's huge. It's gigantic. It's massive. It's huge. Oops, sorry, I hit the microphone. They're huge. It's huge. And I thought, I want to see this thing in person, but it's plastered right up against the chest of the Sphinx. And I thought, I'm going to see this thing. So you get in there. Now, they have a thing called son et lumière. Son et lumière. The sight and sound, right? And it's big because they can, and they broadcast it like hundreds of yards away. So they have these huge speakers and the Sphinx talks and the pyramids talk, and they have this incredibly high powered stuff, amplifiers and big thick electrical cords, and skulls and crossbones saying, do not go here, high tension electricity, you can die, you will die if you do this, you know, stay out of here. And I thought, not me, man. I was 18. I'm going in. So I go in and I go past all these wires and past this little chain and this fence, and I go in there and I walk between the paws of the Sphinx. And the sun is setting. Oh my God. One of the most amazing experiences, if not the most, of my life. First of all, he's huge. You have no idea how big he is. I had no idea how big he was. His paws, I couldn't get, but they're just nowhere near. I mean, he's gigantic, 70 feet tall. His ears alone are 7 feet tall. And I'm looking up at this face that has seen tens of thousands of sunrises. I'm looking up at this face, and I just felt so in love with him and the moment. And I had to walk forward. I walked forward and I touched the stele. Ran my hands over it, you know, probably destroying. No, it's thick. It's very stretched stone. And it's thousands of years old. And I'm getting chills. And it was a moment I can't even begin to describe. And in that moment, after 18 years of angst, 18 years of wondering what I'm going to do with my life. And in that moment, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I did it. In that moment, I knew that there were mysteries and things that I loved. And it became very clear to me. That moment had to happen in my life. And as the sun began to set, it began to get dark. Everything was purple. And I mean purple. It was unbelievable. The sun setting in back. The red. The purple. It was just absolutely fabulous, you know? And I felt so stupid and so small and insignificant. And I realized that no matter whatever else happened in my life, I was simply this person, and nothing could compare to the majesty of so many other people, you know, like my dad, who was a great man and did great things. And it humbled me. And then I hear this yelling coming from this side, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, and uh-oh was right. This guy screaming at me to get out of there. And I'm my best, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm an American sort of, you know, I could understand everything he was saying, like prison and, you know. And luckily, my dad's cousin was the Undersecretary of Tourism. And he came by at right the moment, and he said, no, 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 no. And he showed his credentials, and they whisked me away before I ended up in a prison somewhere. But that, and I dream about that place. It's a sacred place to me. I have a cousin who says, come visit, come visit. He lives 5 minutes away from there. I said, I would go every day. He said, you get bored. I said, no, I don't. I would not get bored. I'd be there every day because that is a sacred place to me. Boy, I get off track. So let's talk about these things, shall we? My grandkids say, their dad says hi and he loves you. Tell your dad hi, and he knows how much I love him. I love him so, so much. So much. So much. I love you guys too. So, the chat is the body. And they loved their land so much that they wanted to be able to live forever. But part of that was dependent upon the survival of the body. And the body not being destroyed, not falling away to dust, because it had to exist. So that gives us a clue into the reason for mummification. They looked to the plant world, the animal world, the insect world was very important to the Egyptians. I look to cocoons and chrysalises to explain what's going on there. Maybe I used to think that they wrapped their mummies so incredibly tightly to keep them from getting up and walking around, because they did believe in the reanimation of the body after death. But I think it was more a symbolic sort of, like a cocoon, you see, like a cocoon. There is a beautiful statue of Thutmose where he's lying on his belly and he's raising his head, smiling, like a child, like a baby waking up. Beautiful. It's not very big. I saw it at a museum. They brought his stuff here to Denver and we went and saw it. Sorry, kids, you were too young. Well, you weren't born yet, so you were definitely too young. But your dad saw it, and your mom saw it, and it was fantastic. I was absolutely mesmerized. Oh, wonderful. So, that, in my mind, was a very important aspect. The body, the corruption of the body, had to be stopped. And that was the reason for mummification, so says I. Now, there is something called the Sahu. The Sahu is the intelligent body, one could call it. Budge calls it that. He calls it here's what I think the Sahu is. The Sahu is that part of us, and when we live, that kind of runs everything. Because you have to admit, it's kind of amazing. What we might call the autonomic nervous system. The Sahu takes care of everything. You have to admit, there's a sort of persnickety guy inside of us, a gal, that takes care of our digestion, just the heart pumps, doesn't stop. Eventually it does, right? But we can do things. We breathe. We don't think about breathing. It just, we breathe. We do things. Our intestines work. Our blood flows. All of that is the Sahu. And they saw it as another aspect of us, another body. And after we die, the Sahu is a part of us that can then leave the body and come back. But it can hang around with the god Sahus and come back. It's a fascinating concept. But I believe that the Sahu is a really powerful essence of health. So the Sahu knows what's good for us all the time. I think we just don't pay attention, you know? And what part of it of us is it that doesn't pay attention? Well, we'll get to that, right? We'll get to that. Well, let's get to that. Let's get to the concept of... So the Sahu is very important at all times. It's that part of us that maintains health. And it can be overcome by things, depending upon certain things. We'll get to that. Let's talk about the Ba. The Ba, B-A, it would be us, our personalities, what we might call, what Freud called the ego, that which we have as consciousness. So the Ba was you and me, and they represented the Ba as a bird with a human head. Probably not one with, like me, that's for sure. So the Ba is thought, conscious thought, the ego. I am, right? Latin, I am, for the most part. And so when we talk about that, we say, okay, the Ba, and the Ba had the ability to come and go as it wishes. So at night, the Ba takes off. And what does it do? It visits other places, hence dreaming. I like that idea. I've never seen the Ba as a bird with a head of a human. In my visualizations, the Ba is just an eye that just kind of flies around. Now, interestingly enough, Rick Griffin, I think his name is Rick Griffin or Rick Griffith, one of the two, Rick Griffin, I think, who did Underground Comics in the 60s, had this eye with wings that he drew quite a bit. And I always thought, that's kind of how I envisioned that. That, except not as... I don't know. There was something not sinister about it, but certainly there was something about it. But to me, it's just consciousness. And consciousness to me is actually, here, let me show you what I see it as. And this is going to, you're going to go, oh, this guy's weird. But you know that already of me. Here is how I see, these are my psychedelic Paisley, my psychedelic cards. Here is one of my, this is how I envision that idea. It's not exactly an eye, but it's consciousness. That is it. And what that is that's a Paisley before it breaks off into something else. It's whole. Now, I know, you're thinking, what in God's name is wrong with this guy? It's hard to understand. These are called Kipper cards, but these are my design. These are cards that I had, that I designed, that I drew. And here's another one. This one is a little less mind-numbing. There it is. And you can see the eye. That is how I view consciousness. See? I know. Calm down. But that's how I view it. All right? Because I don't think it has to. And this thing glows and it flashes. It changes with moods. You see? Can you see that? It's just an eye. But it's a powerful eye. Okay? So that is, to me, what the Ba is. It's the ego, as Freud so called it. And then the Ka is another aspect of us. And the Ka, I think, would very easily pertain to what he called the id, which is the principle of desire. Those things that we want. The id. Now, what would the super... Just a second. What would the super ego be? The super ego being conscience and, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. I think that would be the Sahu. Because the Sahu is saying, Eat what's good for you. Eat those beans. Eat those broccoli. Eat whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, that thing. So you've got the same. This is what's amazing, is that this works. And it works in a modern time as well. I really like this stuff. So back to the id. The ka is extremely powerful in Egyptian thought. The ka can reanimate the body. The ka is definitely, it's angry a lot of the time. Reminds me of when C-3PO is playing Chewbacca. In, you know, they're playing that game. And Han Solo says, something about Wookiees will pull your arm out by the roots or whatever it is, you know, and that's kind of what, you know, because there's this thing about, Boz and Kaz playing, or the pictures of a Ka playing a person, Senet, which is a fantastic game to play. If you ever get a chance to play ancient Egyptian Senet, play it. I don't think they always get the rules right, but boy, it's a heck of a game. So anyway, it's a great game. But the ka is our desire, our principle. So when you find yourself eating that last handful of French fries and you're thinking, why am I eating these? I'm not hungry. They're cold. They're undercooked. And they really don't taste that good. It's the ka. The ka is saying, because I want them. But I shouldn't be eating them. That's the boss speaking. And of course, the sahu is saying, you're killing yourself. You're eating this horrible crap. You're killing yourself. That's the sahu. But your boss is saying, oh, God. Well, I can skip something else later. And the ka is saying, eat them. Come on. You know, that's real. Stuff like that happens. And then there's that part of us when we're watching the tube, for example, and we're watching commercials, and we don't think we're watching. The ka watches. The ka watches. It's like, okay, the ka's watching. I wish I wasn't watching. You know? I get mad sometimes at stuff. I don't know why I'm mad. Because the ka's watching. And the ka gets riled. That's right. Okay. So, we've covered that. I should look at my list here. I know this stuff. I just don't want to leave something important behind. Sahu baka. Yeah. The sahem. Sahem. Power. Drive. Protection. I have two children whom I love with every fiber in my body. And if someone were to say to me, it's them or you, I'd say, take me now. Now, just no question. I would have said that when I was in my 30s. You know? Easily. Without a doubt. There's no chance. And that's sahem. That's about. And I know my daughter would say the same thing. I know my son would say the same thing. And I know that many of you out there would say the same thing. That without a doubt, you would put someone else's life before your own. That's protection. That's thinking about the future. And there's also, if you saw someone doing something to someone you love, you would pounce on them. The beast within you would come out. That's ka, but it's also sekhem. You know the goddess Sekhmet, right? You've heard of the goddess Sekhmet, right? Here you go. This is my empress card. There she is in my tarot deck that I drew. That's the empress. That's Sekhmet. When Thutmose's stuff came, they brought a statue. And I stood in front of that statue for what I thought was 15 minutes at the most. My son finally came and said, Dad, it's been like an hour. She was alive. I felt her ka. And the ka, by the way, of the gods visits their statues, it is said. I sure felt hers in there. And I loved it. And she loved me. It was powerful. It was strong. And it's life force energy. That's what the Ka is. It's life force energy. And it strives to live. And it strives to endure. Yeah. My very name, Abd al-Baki, means servant of the enduring one. Abd al-Baki. Servant of the enduring one. Yeah. In Egypt, my name would be Zachariah, because it's done differently there. Yeah. So it's a different system. But my dad, proud to have it. Proud to have it. So there she is. That's my Empress card. Why? Because lionesses are ferocious. And because they make sure that the species will be reproduced. They present themselves to the male lion every 45 minutes for 3 days to make sure that they will have cubs. And it works. So there it is. There's Sekhmet. Sekhmet is the personification of power. Her name means the powerful one. Feminized. You don't mess with Sekhmet. She's a lioness. You don't mess with Sekhmet. Red of tooth and claw. You don't mess with her. Wonderful. Yeah, she's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful. Now, the Ab, heart. The heart. That was another part of us. The Ab is like a little narc inside of you. What do I mean by that? It records everything that happens in your life. Everything you think, everything you do, everything. It's a little lie detector. So that afterlife, you go to the Hall of Judgment. The Hall of Judgment. And you go up before the judges, usually 43, one for each nome, little city, state, in Egypt. And there are 43 gods, and they ask you questions. I was in a degree in an organization where a guy in a ridiculous suit, supposed to be Anubis, asked me a question, and I answered it. He asked me, "Have you ever made a woman cry?" And I thought, "Oh, yeah, well." And I said, "Yes," because it was the truth. And I'm no longer a part of that whole thing. I won't get to talk about it. But the only prerequisite in that Hall of Judgment is that you tell the truth. Yes, there are things you have done that may get you blackballed, and the blackballing it. Here, let me show you. Let me see here. Yes, here we go. This is for my deck that I drew. This is the old justice card, but Crowley calls it adjustment. So did I. There it is. You can see there at the bottom is Amet. Amam, as she is also called. Amam, which is the sound of her eating your heart. Amam. Crocodile, cheetah, and hippopotamus. Terrifying concept. A hippopotamus is one of the most dangerous animals on the planet. They can run up to 35 miles an hour. Cheetahs are fast, as you know, and maybe it's a leopard. I think it's a cheetah. And the crocodiles are, of course, unbelievable. And she waits for your heart, because if you lie or deemed unworthy, amam. And there is a sacred baboon watching, and there is Thoth watching as Thoth, and there is an ibis at the top of the scale watching as Thoth, and there is your heart shown as a container. You can see it there. It's a little green jar. The heart was thought of as green. I like that. And on the other pen is the feather of Ma'at, which means truth. Balanced against the feather of truth, which is why in Forrest Gump there was a feather that came down and landed on Forrest or next to Forrest, whatever it does, throughout the entire movie, which was to tell you, this is my take on it, that Forrest was telling the truth. That's what that was all about. That's what that was all about. And then at the end of the movie, it goes away. Which tells you everybody else is lying. Because if they're telling the truth, they'll have feathers around them. Right? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if it was that easy? So, you can see here that the heart is heavier than the feather. And look at that baboon. Not a good thing. Not a good thing. So, they end up fine, though. Oh, and the people in the background, let me show you that. Oh, that's the wrong one. Here we go. I decided to think of them as ancestors. It could be Isis and Osiris. But maybe ancestors, which is even more terrifying. Watching you. Watching you. That's part of you. So your entire life, everything you've done, you've thought. So when it comes time, all you do is you tell the truth and you hope for the best. What's the worst that can happen? Om chews you up and you have to do it all over again. You're reincarnated. Oh my God, that was the worst thing that they could think could happen. They didn't want to reincarnate, which I don't blame them. Now, we don't have much left. We have the Khu, which is a luminous body. Carlos Castaneda talks about that when he's talking to Don Juan, right? Carlos Castaneda, great books. I read them when I was, 19, 20. Great books. I suggest them. Some people say they're not true. Doesn't matter. They're pretty trippy books. And that luminous egg is known in Christianity as the glory. I think we also call it the aura. And they consider it something that is separate from us afterwards, but is fused to us all the time. I believe in auras. I've seen them. First time I saw an aura blew my mind. I was 21, 22. Yeah, you see them too. You just don't know it. Auras are seen all the time. We just don't know it. It's part of what we call intuition. You see, I don't like seeing them all the time, so I don't. But that's a different story. If one person in a room can see an aura, everyone can see them. I've taught classes. It's amazing. It's really pretty cool. And what else? Oh, yes, we have then the Khaybet. The Khaybet. Khaybet. No, the Khaybet is the shadow. The shadow is with us in life, right? Philosophically speaking, then, they said that it is also after. Now, Peter Pan lost his shadow. Now, the implications there are really amazing. And it brings a realization to me about Peter Pan that is, well, a little spooky, but very powerful. Barry's brother died at the age of 14. And he was the model for Peter Pan. And I thought, oh my God, this explains everything about Peter Pan. The shadow has a function, I realize, because it travels with us maybe in our dreams or in our night work. There's a place I call night school. The Khu, that brilliant illumination, can help to light places for us. And the Khaybet can hide us if we need to hide, because it is the shadow. And it's not like a shadow on a sidewalk on a bright day. It is absolutely light-absorbing and can hide us if we need to be hidden. And this is the stuff that sometimes needs to happen. But that brings in the idea of lucid thought during meditations or during sleep, that sort of thing, which I don't have time for because I've only got a minute left. The Ren, the ninth and final part. And that is the name. A lot of people mistake this concept, and the Egyptians did themselves, especially later on. They're thinking the name like, Tutankhamun or Tutankhamun or however you want to pronounce it. The Egyptians today pronounce it Tutankhamun, where they chipped it off of everything, and that was fine. If you don't say it, it won't be there. But the truth is, the name is the actual name that was pronounced by the god Ptah. When he created everything that exists. Now, that's a story I have to tell another time because I don't have time today. But it's a wonderful tale. It's an incredible story. The god Ptah self-created, suddenly found himself floating on a rock, and suddenly he took his first breath. Hence his name. I'm sure of that. Onomatopoeia, they did a lot of that. Ptah. Yeah. So there you are. And the name. Well, I'll have to explain that maybe some other time. But the Ren is the last part. So there it is. It's a lot to think about. It's a lot to play around with. What parts were interesting to you? Maybe some. I hope some of it was. Okay. Well, that's all for today. It's all I have time for. I hope you had a good time. I had a good time telling you. I spent a lot of it telling stories, but, I'm an old man, and that's what we do. Until next we meet, which will be next week, I wish you peace and love. And I do love you so much. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.